Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. You know, every once in a while, my colleague George Norrie and his producer team will ask me to crawl out of my bunker on a Saturday night to host the program. So if you're confused and thought this was Sunday, now you know. You're not discombobulated, or maybe you are, just not about this. Glad you're with us. We have some important and intriguing ground to cover over the next 4 hours. Coming up in this hour, we get an update on a perplexing issue that we've explored on this program previously, missing persons, specifically indigenous women. In tribe after tribe, nation after nation across North America, women get brutalized, murdered, and otherwise just vanish off the face of the earth. They are far more likely to be killed than pretty much any other demographic group, and the cases tend to languish without ever being solved by law enforcement. Now, some of the tribes are taking matters into their own hands. They've created the Montana Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force. Ellie Bundy is the presiding officer for that task force, and she joins me momentarily to tell us about it and about the larger underlying issues. In the second hour, a writer and investigator who's been absent from Coast to Coast for way too long. His name is David Marler. He's a meticulous researcher who's put together some really impressive work about the ongoing mystery of these unknown triangles seen in the skies all over the world for a very long time. I recently had a chance to speak to David about one particular UFO case, which for some reason has been all but forgotten. And I would call it the most impressive UFO case that you have never heard of, or a lot of you haven't heard of. It took place over a period of days, over a wide area, had hundreds of eyewitnesses, and in this one little town, thousands of eyewitnesses overall. What they saw, in effect, was a UFO armada, dozens and dozens of these objects of unknown origin zipping around in the skies over a town in New Mexico, but also over a wider area, making themselves very obvious in some kind of a mass display. So we're going to be welcoming David back to Coast about an hour from now. Webmaster Sean Ledesour and I have pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities culled from news sources all over the world. We call it Knapp's News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast AM website. Among the stories posted there now, some breaking news on the UFO front, our report from 2 days ago about the USS Omaha, and for the first time, these radar images recorded during the hours that this ship was being surrounded by as many as 14 unknown spherical objects. This occurred back in July 2019 and is being investigated by the Pentagon's UAP task force. Check it out if you haven't seen it. Also, a related story, the former head of the Pentagon's UFO investigation, Lou Elizondo, who's been our guest on this program a couple of times, is fighting back against what he says is a disinformation campaign aimed at denying the work he did for the Pentagon and trying to wipe out the paper trail that proves he worked there. Also, is there a robot assistant in your future? I could use one. What robots could do for you coming up in not too distant future. And an unusual story about author John Steinbeck, my favorite novelist of all. Turns out he once wrote a werewolf tale, but it's never been published. Check it out. Those stories and more in Knapp's News. While you're there on the website, you can find out how to become a Coast Insider. The cost is about 15 cents a day if you subscribe for a year. Allows you access to a vast archive of programs and interviews, including the Art Bell Vault. You can listen anytime you want, as often as you want. It's a great deal. You can also see how to subscribe to George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief, in which George delves into mysteries of all sorts with intriguing guests, similar to what he does here on the radio. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and the pet badger. Lock the door, put on a pot of Joe, slide your bod into those silky jammies and your toes into the bunny slippers, plop yourself down in a comfy spot, turn down the lights, and turn up the radio. In a moment, Ellie Bundy, missing and murdered indigenous women. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. some astonishing numbers here to digest. 84% of indigenous women experience physical, sexual, or psychological violence in their lifetimes. 84%. Indigenous people are four times as likely to go missing as the rest of the population in the state of Montana. And the numbers are similar for other indigenous peoples across North America. We've spoken about this on this program previously in the Highway of Tears up in the Northwest, where dozens of women have simply vanished and are presumed to be murder victims. The crimes often go unreported and unsolved, but things are slowly starting to change. Ellie Bundy is my guest for this hour. She is a presiding officer of the Montana Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force, currently serves as a tribal council member and secretary for the Confederated Tribes of the Flathead Indian Reservation. She was appointed to Montana's Missing Indigenous Peoples Task Force in June of 2019 and also works with local working groups on this issue. Welcome to the program, Ellie.
Thank you.
The numbers that I just mentioned, they're just astonishing. And although some of them apply specifically to Montana, the tribes and the indigenous peoples there, the same is true for many other tribes around North America, right?
Yes. Yep.
Can you share some of that information with us, how big this problem has grown?
I actually have numbers I can share with you now for where we're looking, what we're looking at in Montana.
Sure.
And these are going to be as of May 11th at our last state task force meeting. At that time, we had 179 missing persons in the state of Montana, and this information is on our missing persons clearinghouse. 57 of those were classified as indigenous, which is a total of 32% in a state where our indigenous population is just under 7%.
And missing meaning they're gone. They don't just wander away from home. They didn't just pick up and move. Something bad has happened.
We don't know. I mean, we can't say if they do have a right. You know, some of them are of age. They could very well have wandered off from home and just don't want people to know where they are. And they have a right to do that, but we don't know. They're just missing. They haven't been in contact with families. So,
One of the problems that you've highlighted in your work and that we've heard about before is that many of the incidents, the violent attacks, the murders, assaults, things of that sort, just simply don't get reported. They don't get solved because law enforcement may not even be aware of them. At least that's one reason. What's the main issue there, the lack of reporting? Why does that happen?
I think there's several reasons why people feel uncomfortable to report. There's fear of law enforcement for some folks, a bias, stigma. I think families are sometimes worried about how they may be looked upon or that they feel maybe responsible for, like maybe a juvenile who was out running around and they're going to be looked at as a bad parent if they have to admit that their kid was at a party and they allowed it and they knew the kid was at a party. Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah.
And so sometimes, those things happen, and we would hope that it doesn't keep from somebody from reporting, but it does.
Well, I guess some of it could be the same as for other groups of the population, women who are battered and beaten by an abusive husband, for example. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the attitudes of law enforcement in general? Why would there be a distrust of law enforcement? Are you not talking about tribal law enforcement or something exterior law enforcement agencies or both?
I think it could be a combination of both. You know, on our reservation in particular, we're really lucky to have an amazing tribal law enforcement team. But other places don't have that same luxury, even within the state of Montana. A lot of reservations have, a lack of personnel to respond. And so maybe if they're unable to respond as quickly or engage as much, people maybe distrust capabilities or the communication is a little bit more lacking. But there's a lot of pressure too when you work on a really large reservation, and it takes time to get to places, but,
Go ahead.
things happen on, you know, the reservation. We have, we do have problems with addictions and other heavy things. And so sometimes there's just difficult dealings with law enforcement, maybe for other reasons.
Yeah, I understand.
So that fear has been kind of instilled.
Is there a sense among tribal members, not only yours, but across the North America, that outside law enforcement agencies just don't care? They don't, just don't work hard enough on these kinds of cases.
Definitely. And I would hope that that's getting better. We've had a lot of forward progress, certainly with, you know, the feds stepping in and taking initiative to create programs and to, you know, we started working on a tribal community response plan that was in response to those efforts at the federal level. And so I think things are moving in the right direction. But law enforcement is really key to all of this and all of the things that we're trying to do. Law enforcement is first and foremost in kind of the success of those. So I hope we're making strides.
Is it the FBI that has jurisdiction for a murder on a reservation?
So we would, it would be our county officers first and foremost, but our, so on the Flathead Indian Reservation, we have 10 different jurisdictions that operate, and those include city officers, our tribal police, highway patrol, four counties. And so it would depend on the location and who has jurisdiction.
And the the Flathead Reservation, describe its parameters. How big is it? I mean, I get a sense that this is a really big area.
We're on 1.2 million acres.
Wow.
In northwestern Montana.
And how many residents?
In the entire state of Montana or just on the reservation?
Reservation.
I'm not sure on the entire population. We have 8,000 enrolled tribal members, though, and 5,000 of those live on the reservation.
Do you have businesses that help support tribal members?
Yeah. Tribal and non-tribal.
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Let me ask you this question.
Business.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. There's a story that you tell on this website, the portal that you've created, about a young woman named Ashley Loring Heavy Runner, and it's a featured story that you helped launch. And can you share her story, what happened to her, and how this has played out?
So what I know about Ashley, so Ashley is from Browning, Montana. She's not one from my reservation, so I don't know a lot of specific details. I do know that she was last seen at a house party, I believe, where she was witnessed to be drinking and visiting with other friends in June of 2017, and then just hadn't been seen since then. And there was a lack of response to her case, where law enforcement officials just said she's of age and that she can leave when she wants to. And so there was no immediacy, I guess, to her search, and she was 20 when she vanished.
Do you know any of the personal details about her, about her family, about what kind of life she led up to that point?
I in the research I did with on her in particular, I found out that she loved riding horses. She grew up on a ranch near Harp Butte, and that's located on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation. She was very active in high school. She participated in track and volleyball. She was interested in pursuing a forestry degree, and I know was looking at transferring to the University of Montana that fall prior to her missing.
So she disappears. She's seen at a party. Then she's gone. Law enforcement drags their feet, saying, well, she's of age. We're not going to look. How did it proceed from there? Did they eventually get started on a search? Did you look for human remains? Or how did that proceed? What happened?
I think there's been a lot of searches for Ashley, and I think a lot of false leads. I've, you know, heard there's been searches in the mountains in the area, and just nothing. But I don't know any more specific details related to those searches in particular.
I have read in the past that a large percentage of the sort of attacks and crimes that are inflicted on Indigenous women come from people who are not tribal members. I don't know if that's true for at the Flathead Reservation, but it certainly is true in other Indigenous peoples. Any thoughts on that? Do you have any statistics or guesses about the numbers?
I don't have any statistics. I do think it's a fair statement. It certainly is. It goes both ways. You know, we do have Indigenous people who do the same, but it is certainly concerning how many more non-tribal, non-Indigenous people abuse Native women.
So not really a good solid guess on the breakdown, because I thought
no.
I'd read it was a pretty really here more than 50%, a number like that.
Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't. I'd hate to give you a number right. when I'm not absolutely sure on what that is.
You mentioned about drugs and alcohol, and of course that's true for all parts of society, Indigenous or otherwise. But I have read considerable pieces of information about organizations that take advantage of the reservations, the wide open spaces, the lack of a law enforcement attention to conduct illicit businesses, to get drug trafficking, for example, not only is used and prostitution as well, that not only involves tribal members, but that they are used to market things to people outside the tribe. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do know, you know, we have issues on the reservation with drug cartels coming in and being able to sell drugs here because our jails are full. It's difficult to, I guess, hold people who are here doing that kind of business. And it's easy. You know, we're a population that can be taken advantage of easily because of our demographics. You know, we're economically disadvantaged for the most part. We do suffer with some of those things like addictions. And like you said, that's everywhere, not just specific to the Indigenous population, but across the nation. But it's definitely people are taken advantage of and can be easily taken advantage of. We also have a huge problem with runaway youth, which comprise a large number of the missing persons. And so if a juvenile runs away, then they're also really vulnerable to what happens with drugs and sex trafficking and maybe putting themselves in vulnerable situations where maybe they're having to pay off drug debts. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So we invited you here because we wanted to hear and share with people about this site, this portal that you've created. We can start that conversation. We're going to go to a break in about a minute, but can you start to describe how this was created and what you hope to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so this one was started with Blackfeet Community College. It's one that was, it came out of the state's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force. We had a grant for $25,000 that we awarded to Blackfeet Community College, and they started this database and portal to help streamline the reporting of missing individuals. And it also serves as a go-between between all levels of law enforcement. And I can
speak
more to that after the break if you prefer, or...
All right. Yeah. So we're talking with Ellie Bundy about this portal that's been created to help streamline and encourage reports about missing persons, murdered persons, mysteries involving attacks on the indigenous people, including and particularly about women. We'll come back in a moment. We're talking about indigenous women, indigenous peoples, and violence perpetrated against them. I mentioned in passing the Highway of Tears in the introduction to this conversation. That's a 425-mile stretch of highway in British Columbia, where dozens of women have vanished. Some of them obviously murdered. Too many of the cases, though, just remain unsolved. But it's not isolated to that one stretch of asphalt. Indigenous women are battered and raped and murdered at alarming rates compared to other populations, other demographic groups. Ellie Bundy is trying to make a difference and change that narrative. We're going to hear about her work and the work of her task force right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Ellie Bundy, we're back. Tell us more about the website, the portal, why it was created, and what you hope to accomplish.
Yeah, so if anybody's interested in looking at that website, it's MMIPMT.com. And so, again, that was created under the Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force, and we call it the LINC Act, but it stands for the Looping in Native Communities Act. And it began with a $25,000 grant that was awarded to Blackfeet Community College, and then they received a matching donation from AT&T for $25,000. And so they created this network for tribal communities to share missing persons data and at the same time to allow for safe, easily accessible, I guess, online reporting system. And so family and friends can log on to that website, complete a contact information form about their missing person, and then that system would reach out to all of the different law enforcement agencies and make sure that they saw the report. And so it's kind of just a go-between between law enforcement and the system or the person reporting. And so we're hoping that more people, it takes away that fear of those who don't want to work directly with law enforcement.
I noticed that the report goes to the Blackfeet law enforcement, not to outside groups, because of trust issues, right?
It's going to be different for each reservation. So right now, Blackfeet is the only one that's using the system because Blackfeet Community College is the one that got the grant. They're the first tribe on the system. And so CSKT is the second that's going to be added to that network. And we are just getting started on that. We just announced last week, I believe, was our official announcement. And so they'll be working with our law enforcement agency. We have a couple of our guys who are serving as LINC coordinators, and they're actually within our law enforcement department. And so we'll be trained probably within the next month. And then we'll get on the system. And then the hope is that all 8 reservations in the state of Montana will be added. And then each time somebody reports, it will go to Blackfeet Community College, and then it also feeds into our local agencies.
So I wonder, could this become a model, something that spreads to the all of North America that other tribes could either tap into or could use it as a model for their own sites?
Absolutely, it could be used as a model. I don't know about tapping in. I don't know what the capability of the system is that we have to have everybody on the same system, but it's definitely would be a good model.
And the anonymity is key, right? So people can file something, tell what they know,
yep,
and don't have to worry about any repercussions.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I guess I would stress, though, that we always hope that people first and foremost would go directly to law enforcement. Or even, you know, there's advocates that are willing to help do that too and serve as that go-between. But this is, if that's absolutely not an option, then this is what we're hoping will catch those other folks.
I guess it's key to get the word out. Let people know that you exist, that the site exists, the portal. I know you had an event on May 22nd. What happened and was it a success?
Yeah, it was a good event. We held it in Missoula at the University of Montana. We had speakers. Kimberly Loring was there. She is actually Ashley Loring, Heavy Runner's sister. And so she spoke. Dr. Carla Bird, who's the president of Blackfeet Community College, spoke. Frank Goings, who's with the Blackfeet Law Enforcement, myself, Drew Landry, who is the director for MMIP-MT, and several others were there. It was a great event. It was a small turnout on site, maybe 40 people or so, but great first start.
I'd like to hear about you and why you got involved in this and jumped in with both feet. Is there an incident? Was there a case that was the breaking point for you? Is there something personal or in your own family that, I don't want to get too personal, but is there anything you could share about the motivation for you jumping in and being so involved?
Oh gosh, I hope I can say this without getting emotional. My kids were growing up and out of the house. I serve on our local fire department, and I kind of felt like that's all I was doing. And I thought I needed something else to do, I guess. And so in January 2019, the tribe here, and this was prior to me being on tribal council, but the tribe established a resolution to address this issue that created our own local CSKT MMIP work group. And that work group started holding community meetings in different communities, and they held four of those meetings. And it was to try to reach out to the community, find out what their concerns were in regard to this topic, and to try to get people involved as volunteers on that committee. And so I attended one of them in Arlee. One of our tribal council members at the time helped host that with our tribal local law enforcement guys. And our missing persons investigator, he shared a story about one of the gals who'd went missing. They had a tip that indicated she could possibly be in a trailer house in Othello, Washington. And there was a trailer, and there were things in the trailer that kind of separated the girls, and that they were hooked up to IV drip lines feeding them heroin, and that for $10, migrant workers can come in and do whatever they wanted to those girls.
Oh, yeah.
And when I heard that story, I couldn't get past it. I felt like it was one of those things it said a lot. It could have been my daughter. It could have been my sister. And when you really put yourself into thinking that, how do you hear something like that and not work to fix it? You can't just ignore it. And so that's when I decided, I made the commitment then that I was going to join the local work group. And I did. And then that led to the state task force.
The task force, what is it, an outreach program? Do you physically boots on the ground, kind of walk out and try to find people who need help, or what is it? More that you're just a place and people can find you?
So the tribal one, the CSKT work group, we do education outreach activities as requested on the reservation. We're trying to get into more schools. We've presented to civic organizations. We had a hotline at one time, but now we're going to the link system instead. We host silent auctions. We're raising money for what we call a victim services assistance fund, for when we do have somebody go missing, we can help support them with whatever needs that might be. Billboards are very expensive and, so things of those natures. So we're kind of a fundraising, a little bit smaller level. And then at the state level, we've done a lot. We support legislative efforts. We had four this last legislative session. We conducted community meetings. We host monthly meetings. We've had a lot done this last 2 years, and with the legislation just passed, we'll be able to go for another 2 years now. And like I mentioned earlier, look more into what's going on with our kids and addressing the runaway issues.
And the website, the portal, right. The website and portal, is it just for missing persons, or you take reports on other kinds of crimes, a woman who's being battered, something like that?
It's just for missing persons.
Okay. And has this effort or and awareness of the problems, has it changed anything? Have you changed the narrative in any way, at least regarding tribal law enforcement? Are they more responsive than maybe in the past?
I hope, you know, I mentioned earlier, I think we're really fortunate to have the law enforcement that we do. Our guys have been involved in this effort from the beginning. Like I mentioned earlier, they helped hold those community meetings, and not everybody has that. So we are really blessed to have our guys boots on the ground immediately. And so I hope we can help, I guess, inspire other law enforcement agencies to step to the plate and do the same.
Yeah. We'll take a couple of calls, and then I have some more questions for you. We'll go east of the Rockies, Ann in Michigan. Hi, Ann. You're on with Ellie Bundy.
Yes, Ellie. Ellie, does your website have posted pictures of the missing with first names, nicknames, and or last names? And also maybe even with their names, does it have links to the history of the girls?
I believe you can find that both on the MMIPMT.com and then on the Montana Missing Persons Clearinghouse as well. You'd be able to find that information.
And we have a link to the website and portal on the Coast to Coast site if you want to take a look and check it out. Thanks for calling. West of the Rockies, we have Don in Seattle. Hi, Don.
Hey, George.
What's on your mind?
Well, I got a story. It's a true story. I'm a commercial fisherman up in Alaska, and I ended up on a boat with a Macaw Indian from the Macaw Reservation out in Nia Bay, Washington. And I got to know one of the crew members on the boat. He was a Macaw Indian. He is, I guess. I don't know. And he was telling me he had a wife and five children, and she was a Macaw, and they lived on the reservation out in Nia Bay. And he was telling me how things were going. And then one day he said that he thought she was running around on him behind his back while he was in Alaska. And he got so violently mad and almost demonic, said he was going to kill her. He's going to kill this. A lot of expletives, and come to find out, not long after that, she came up missing, and I told everybody that I knew what he had said to me, and they all told me that I was crazy, and then they started digging into it, and they all agreed, like 6 months, a year later, that yes, he was the person that did do it, but they could not prove it. And I think that he took her, because he and his uncle had a fishing boat, and I think they took her out to sea out in Nia Bay and chained her up and dumped her overboard. So,
well,
that's my story.
So did you talk to police about it? You shared information?
No, but I talked to other people that talked to the police about him, and the whole village knew that he had done it. And they, at present, they couldn't prove that he did it because there was no body. And they had five little boys together, and so he robbed those children of their mother, plus all the other heinous acts that happened. And the reason why I think he did do it is because he was a Marine over in Japan or Okinawa, and he got a dishonorable discharge because he had stabbed a taxi driver. He got, and he was telling me all this because when you're on a fishing boat, you talk a lot. There's no right. TV, there's no radio. It's just people talking back and forth. And he ended up in the brig for stabbing a taxi driver when he got liquored up. So,
well, appreciate you sharing that story. Ellie, I would imagine it's the kind of thing that you've heard before.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that you still make contact with the law enforcement agency directly and not through other people. You know, going through other people is hearsay. But if he shared information with you indicating that that was something he was going to do, I would at least make the effort to go directly to law enforcement and share that information.
Don, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Yeah, it is. It's sad. I appreciate the call. I know there is a reference on your website to some legislation, federal legislation, sponsored by John Tester, the U.S. Senator from Montana. What's that about?
So are you talking about the legislation I spoke about earlier? I know the ones that just passed for us now, it's House Bill 98 and Senate Bill 4, both of which continue the Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force at the state level for an additional right. 2 years. And House Bill 98 also extends the link grant.
Yeah, this was a reference to national federal legislation sponsored by John Tester. It didn't spell out what the legislation is, so I was just seeing if you knew what that's about. But if you don't, we can move on. You know, that your site does mention about films that have helped change the dynamic. Wind River was one that I saw a while ago as a great movie. And then there's some documentary filmmakers that we had on this program last year, three guests who described similar situations for indigenous nations in different parts of the country. And these stories are so bleak and tragic. And I know that learning about it really hit me hard. And I know our listeners had the same reaction. When you add this to the long list of, indignities over a couple of centuries, feels like insult to injury, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's another one I'd like to mention that would speak more specifically to some of the cases here locally, and some of the family members are in sure. this one. It's called Somebody's Daughter.
Yeah. Yep.
You can find that one, www.somebodysdaughter-mmiw.com. And that's a great watch, too, for hearing from families directly who have lost loved ones here.
Are you hopeful now that this portal is up and running, that I assume people are using it, that tips are coming in? Are they?
Not here yet. As far as Blackfeet, they've had some action there, and we're working out the bugs still there. But I'm very optimistic for when it comes to CSKT. You know, and I think that is just one tool in our toolbox. You know, we've also just developed a tribal community response plan that got national attention. And that was another piece where our local law enforcement, tribal law enforcement, as well as those 10 different agencies I mentioned earlier, kind of all came to the table to address this issue. So a lot of really great things came out of that process too. So we feel like we're in a really good place with a combination of that and this website, the link.
Great. Wish you all the best, Ellie Bundy. Thanks for being here and sharing this news with us. And please stay in touch. I'd really like to hear more as your work progresses.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Talk to you again. We have the link to the website and portal that we've been discussing here. If you want to check it out, it's on the Coast to Coast website. Up next, we talk to David Marler about the greatest UFO case you've probably never heard of, as well as UFO triangle research that he's been doing.